Welcome to the official podcast of the Next CMO hosted by Plana, makers of the first AI-driven marketing leadership platform for quickly and easily creating winning marketing plans, maximizing budget impact, and improving ROI. The Next CMO is a thought leadership podcast for those that are CMOs or want to become one. My name is Kelsey Kraft, and I'm the Senior Marketing Manager.
And I'm Peter Mahoney. I'm the founder and CEO of Plana, and welcome to the Next CMO podcast.
For this week, we have Norman Guidongo, the CMO of Acoustic, as our guest. Norman specializes in digital marketing, online strategy, product marketing, and technology market opportunities. Thanks for coming on, Norman.
It is a pleasure to be here. I'm excited to chat.
The pleasure is all ours, Norman. We're very excited for this. I've heard so many great things about you, Norman, and we have not had the chance, I don't think, to meet yet, which is surprising.
It's surprising, and I've heard great things about you, Peter, and it's a small community.
But I didn't know you met my mom. She's pretty much the only one who would say that.
But she said lovely things, and that's, I think, important that your mom can still say it.
That's right. Did she say I was supposed to call her?
She did say you're supposed to visit, and she doesn't understand why she hasn't seen you since March, but I'm assuming who knows why.
This is true. Norman and I share one of the world's best marketing ops executives in common, of course. Shout out to Meg Meaney, who is amazing. And Meg and I worked together at a previous company, and she's now been with Norman at two companies.
That is correct. And so, which, you know, one of those big lessons, right? Find great talent and stick with them.
This is true. We'll save that because we're going to ask for some lessons for CMOs later. So you can write that one down. And because I'm sure anyone who...
Every time I say anything that makes any sense, I write it down so I can say it again in the future.
Perfect. So I want to dig into Acoustic in a minute, but I'd love to set the table and learn a little bit about you, Norman, first. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you got here.
Oh, it's such a long, strange trip.
We got time.
Yes, indeed. So in short, I always like to say that I stumbled into being a marketer, that many of us, in fact, are accidental marketers. And it turned out that's not a bad thing to do. So a long time ago, far away, I went to college and then graduate school. I was actually on a path to become a research psychologist and in social psychology. And then when I was in graduate school, I got involved with actually doing research in human-computer interaction. And that led me to two discoveries. A, I really like doing that. And B, working in the software business pays a lot more than being an academic. And so I ran off and joined the software circus, as I like to say. And then spent a lot of years working in software companies, working my way up in user experience, user interface design, then into product management, then into product marketing, and slowly realized that I was really good at being a generalist and didn't have the patience necessarily to be a specialist. And inevitably that led me to start to run marketing teams, marketing department, and then ultimately becoming the biggest generalist of all, which is a CMO. And so I did that for a lot of years across both small and large software companies. I also spent 5 years working in a marketing agency because I wanted to be on the other side of the table for all those folks that I've been paying to work with me. I was like, hey, let's see what it's like on that side. So I did do that, and it was great learning. And then actually probably now 5 plus years ago, I actually ended up coming to Boston and joining Carbonite to lead marketing there, a well-known Boston tech company. Spent a number of years there helping convert that from a B2C to a B2B company, expanding it through a number of acquisitions, and then left Carbonite about 2 years ago, and then joined Acoustic about a little more than a year and a half ago. And now here I am, and it's once again November of 2020, and all things are different for everyone.
Yeah, the world is strange a little bit. Well, it's interesting because I did hear from Meg that we are very much alike, and I'm not sure if that was a compliment or an insult. And you and I both are accidental marketers, and I would have degrees in physics and computer science and stumbled into the wrong room and became a marketer. Also a huge generalist and quickly realized that the only thing I could do is lead the team. So I get where you're coming from, Norman.
You clearly have the same set of qualifications, and that sometimes works.
So I never spent any time on the agency side. And that's a good slug of time, 5 years. It sounds like it was probably a valuable experience. Would you do it again, though?
That's a terrific question, Peter, because I loved my time in the agency world. And I loved it for three reasons. One, the people. We were at the time a small independent agency, mid-sized, depending on how you define it. Eventually it was acquired by a bigger agency, but it was a real set of collegial family people that connected with each other. So I love the people. I love the diversity of clients, because oftentimes as marketers, we're on a track, technology, software, finance, pharma, whatever it may be. And working in the agency, I got to work with Nike and Boeing and Microsoft and insurance companies and French fry companies. So you get a diversity of clients that's really educational, because you see the common threads very quickly. And you get to be really fast turn, new problems every day hitting you. So would I do it again? Absolutely. But the agency world is changing so much all the time that finding the right situation is probably harder than anything else at this point, because I think there's so many pressures on agencies, particularly nowadays, to deliver value, and big companies are bringing it in-house, and the creative process is all over the map. But it was a fabulous learning experience.
Tell us a little bit about Acoustic and its origins from IBM.
Acoustic
that was a huge sigh.
it's a fascinating tale. And the reason I sighed is because what I've learned more than anything else is that you think an origin tale is like, rocket crashes to Earth, baby comes out, grows up, Superman, end of origin story. But it turns out that much like in comic books where they retell the same story all over and over again, in the software business, at least, and certainly in the carve-out space, the origin story is not a one and done. It's actually an ongoing evolving thing. And that's been a great lesson. So back to the origin story, the short form is IBM is a big global technology leader. Many years ago, IBM saw this hot category called marketing automation technology and said, we should be in that. So they went out and bought a bunch of companies, as big companies often do, to create a set of solutions in the marketing technology space. Turns out, for any number of different reasons, that's probably not the right space for IBM. Time passed, and a number of years ago, they realized, and some folks inside the business realized, hey, we might be better if we were outside of IBM. So they packaged it all up. It was acquired by a private equity firm. And so a set of products and their associated customers and all the people working on it were done what we call a carve-out, essentially sold to private equity. So the entire business became Acoustic overnight, as a standalone private entity that serves 3,500 customers and has about 1,000 employees and 6 different major products. And overnight, from history, was Acoustic born. Now we've spent the time since that happened in July of 2019 going through the transformation of, you can't just stand up a company and somehow it magically works the same way it did inside a multi-billion dollar, hundreds of thousands of person company. So you have to constantly make decisions over who's going to do this and how do we do this and what's our underlying ERP system and our underlying CRM system and our underlying accounting system. And so we've been through all these months of transformation to make Acoustic truly a standalone company. But in our minds, we're the largest independent marketing cloud dedicated to marketers, and we have great solutions, and we can talk about those. But inside the business, it's, okay, how do we solve this problem? How do we solve this problem? How do we solve this problem? So it's an education in and of itself, but it's also fabulous, because as a marketer, my customers are marketers, not unlike for the two of you as well, right? It's cool to be able to finally be able to go to my peers and say, hey, I got what you need. And I've been there, done that. So that's the short story of Acoustic. And we've been having a really great time building something unique.
Well, it's really cool. And it's, oh God, there's so many places to go from this, Norman. It's first of all, I started my career in IBM. And I saw back when Norman was probably still in middle school or something, I was at IBM and we were making things like OS2 and Office Vision. And then ultimately a little bit later, Lotus Notes. And IBM proved again and again, they actually build amazing technology, but they don't have the right go-to-market motion for selling software and the right culture as a company. But they can build really great stuff. And in fact, when I was at Nuance, we had a great long-term research partnership with the speech and AI team at IBM. And
they do build great stuff. You really said it, Peter, right? They build great things. The selling of it is harder. And as CMOs, we know that the differentiator, particularly for SaaS companies, is your go-to-market model.
Yeah, and it may be based on the way they structured this private equity deal that it's a good way for them to realize value. So it could be a good thing. Yeah, I know you certainly, I'm sure you do. It would be a good thing for you, but it's amazing. And it's interesting because we recently had a chat with Charlie Ungashick. I don't know if Charlie, he's the CMO of Validity. And Validity is an interesting parallel sort of bizarro world version of what you all have done, and that you were a collection of things inside a company. Validity is a group of tools from multiple companies that were strapped together by a private equity team that's now building a single thing, very focused on, you know, messaging and email and the like.
And we're actually a user. So
good. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's fascinating. And what I wanted to think about from the marketer in me wants to know how you launched that. So how do you, so you created a new brand, you had to create a new brand personality, you had to create a whole new strategy, you had to create a whole look and feel, you had to create everything that you do. So tell us a little bit about what that project looked like, and more importantly, how you define success and whether you think you're there yet.
Those are all the key questions, Peter. And I will tell you that I was both helped and hampered just a little bit by the fact that I joined Acoustic, it was September of 2019. The company was officially carved out and launched in July. So there was a set of work done before I got there. The name and a very, very extensive, complex brand book by an unnamed branding agency that the set of people who were doing the carve out had created. There was a lot of work done there. The thing that was interesting was that it was done without there being a single senior marketing leader inside the business. There were a handful of smart people, a little bit more, you know, they sort of director level perhaps that were involved in that. And one of the things that became apparent to me when I got there was having been through the brand experience many times, on both sides, as on the company side and the agency side, was that the distance between a brand book and an actual living, breathing brand that can work for a company is actually a fairly great distance.
Yeah, it's called realization, right?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And so I came in and looked at the great work that a lot of people had done, and then had to put that in the context of my budget, my time, how many people do I have, and what are my priorities?
That's called putting the real in realization, Norman, is what you have to deal with.
Well said, yes. So we put that real in, and it basically came down to my goals were straightforward. I set up right from the start, look, I can't do everything. What I can do is be super focused on, I'm going to make the Acoustic name known and known for something, because I'm going against big companies like Salesforce and Adobe and Oracle and hyped companies like HubSpot and others. So I really had to figure out a way to make us stand out. And I had to do that at the same time that I was simultaneously building my demand generation engine, because I didn't have one of those either. Fortunately, good marketers know that brand and demand are two sides of the same coin. And if you invest in one, you'll be able to invest in the other at the same time. So we did a lot of activity to both be building that engine and to start to bring the brand to life. And I really am focused on stay simple. I can only have one brand. I'm going to focus all my effort on the acoustic name. I'm going to make it stand out. And then I do what I like doing, which is I also measure. So I did a baseline measurement and said, okay, what's my brand awareness? What's my brand perception? Not surprisingly, the first time I did that, it was pretty much non-existent. Yeah, never heard of it. Now, I can say that we just actually completed wave two of that brand awareness research in October, and we had very significant jump. So my back, so how do I know I've been successful? For those of us who are marketers, we know all about aided and unaided awareness. And my unaided awareness back the first time I did this baseline, shortly after we launched this whole thing, was less than 5%. And here in October, let's just say 7, 8, 9 months later, whatever the amount of time is, my unaided awareness with the same demographic was near 30%.
Wow. So, that's amazing.
That shows that you're getting the payoff. And yeah, that is, to me, you can't necessarily put a dollar on that. But what you want to do is you want to show directionally, yeah, look, we did this. These people didn't know who we are. The same demographic knows who we are. That means that it's going to be that much easier for all of our demand activity, all of our salespeople to do their job, because people won't say, acoustic, huh? I don't need a guitar. And we can move past that part really quickly.
So I keep hearing your ads on NPR, by the way. So
Thank you. That is money well spent. I'm a believer in the impact of those ads in the right place.
I completely agree. In fact, I had a great experience with NPR when I was marketing the Dragon brand for Nuance, mm-hmm. the voice recognition software. And we had a great experience with them. And I think it's about finding the right content that's immersive and people listen to. But I was going to ask you, what it reminded me of listening to that is you have such a fabulous name, by the way. I love acoustic. And have you worked on any sonic branding?
Yeah, it's funny you ask that because it has been on my list. And we have not yet. It is on the long list of things right behind hire somebody to do work is the actual next item on the list, do work. But it is, what do you think? And so here's an interesting point, though, Peter, because I agree, it is a fabulous name. Acoustic comes from the science of sound. We really focus on the fact that we want to listen to our customer. Mm-hmm. We want to hear what they're saying. Before I got to acoustic, there was a general belief amongst the people there that we should avoid any sort of sound, musical, et cetera, connotations whatsoever in anything we do so that there was no misinterpretation of what the name mm-hmm. could mean. I fully understood that logically. I disagreed with it emphatically as a brander and brand marketer, because I believe that we could do something interesting if we invested the right way. If we built the brand, there wouldn't be confusion and people would have an expectation that we would actually fulfill the promise of the science of sound. So it is something on the horizon. We're just not quite ready for it yet.
I'm glad you're looking at it. And I'm definitely of like mind with your thinking there, Norman, that if you build the right framework around the brand and the right, it's a great way to experience the brand. You have to define what it is, obviously. And especially because you're seeing more and more really cool opportunities to leverage audio in marketing, obviously podcasts, radios. Check out a really cool company called AdSonica.
The name.
Yeah, isn't it great? A friend of mine, William Agish, started the company, and they do a really cool, they use the JPEG standard to encode audio and sound in an image file. Oh, so cool. It allows you to really get sound out, sound paired where you otherwise wouldn't be able to see it. You don't need a streaming server and things like that. So anyway, some really cool stuff in audio that, God, I could talk about this all day long, but I have an agenda with you, Norman, that I have to prosecute. So tell me a little bit about, you started probably with a clean-ish slate at acoustic. So you probably had a relatively small skeletal team. You had a...
I like to say, a variety pack of marketers plucked from IBM. One product marketer, one brand marketer, one, right? So I just had the variety pack of people.
The variety pack, it reminds me of my daughter who always makes me go out and get her those, what do you call those alcoholic seltzers that come in a variety pack?
Those things. White Claw.
White Claws. Yes,
yeah. Free advertising for Claw. I have a 17-year-old. I heard the tales.
Yes, exactly. Now, given that you had a relatively clean slate, you had a brand new thing. You had a near 1,000 person company with a big agenda. How did you build the organization? What does your organization look like now that you had the ability to, and I'm sure your resources were far from limitless, but you had some options in how you built a team. And I'm fascinated how, given that, because I've had this opportunity to take over a big team, and then you can tweak like 20%. But you could do it from the start. So did you do anything different than you've done in the past, as an example?
It's a great, interesting question, because the whole topic is one that we could spend hours talking about. But I started with a team of, I believe it was 11 people. And as I said, it really was a variety pack, because I was like, what if each of these pulled out of different groups within IBM? Interestingly, these products that form acoustic, even though they were all in the same IBM division, they actually didn't have anything to do with each other. They didn't work together at all. They didn't sell together. They were all siloed. So I had people that came from the different product groups, and everyone was trying to learn everything. And I came into it, and there were certain constraints on what I could do just in terms of budget and the number of people I could hire. Also, given the terms of the carve-out, people were, in fact, secure in their roles for a period of time, and we had to be respectful of the terms of that agreement as well. So I came into it with the mindset that there were two things that were super important to me. One, we had to be really efficient and focused on the most important aspects for the business of what marketing could do. And it quickly became apparent that we had to build a demand generation engine. It just, that was a given. There was no demand generation engine because it wasn't something that really had been done at IBM. And we were building for a new model, high volume, high velocity SaaS go-to-market model. So I had to invest in that. And then I had to have discipline over tracking the data. Right? You can't build demand and not be able to say, how many leads do we get? How many sales did that arrive at? What happened? What does the pipeline look like? All those questions that we look at all the time. So I was very thoughtful in knowing that I was going to ultimately build towards and I'm a little bit of a classic marketer in the fact that I like a somewhat classic marketing team, which is that there's a demand generation, there's a communications and content funnel, there's a product marketing, then there's a marketing operations team in it. Even at small scale, I think having those disciplines and having them interact with each other is key. So I went ahead and looked at the resources I had and said, okay, I have nothing here. For example, marketing ops, had nothing there, ended up bringing in ultimately Meg to lead my marketing ops team. I had one person doing demand gen, but I didn't have a senior leader, was able to bring in a senior leader there, didn't have a senior leader for marketing communications, brought in someone there, and had a great person that ultimately became the leader of my product marketing. And having those four pillars, I think to some marketers, you should have a blah, 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 and all these modern, different, interesting ways to put it together. Possible in some organizations. Turns out that in a software company, you always need those four things to be able to do the fundamentals of marketing. And if you can do that, you can start to fill in the layers underneath it. And today we're 18 people and it's all the little pieces are there. Is it perfect? No. The other thing is we're flexible. If something's not working, I'll change it. And I like to believe that we're reinventing how we operate, even as the company. As I said, there's multiple sort of origin stories, right? We keep reinventing. Oh, Salesforce has finally been implemented. Great. Now we can actually get data that way versus using a spreadsheet. Oh, Salesforce is now connected to our own email marketing product. Great. We can get more data. So you have to evolve as you implement each piece underneath it.
I'm curious about your target market, because I know you mentioned we both have the ability to market to marketers, and there's pros and cons of that, but it's so awesome to be able to communicate with people that you know best. So talk to me a little bit about your ideal customer and who is involved in that decision-making process.
That's been a part of the endless sort of iterate and rebirth of coming through, figuring out exactly who are we selling to. Turned out that our sweet spot for our core sort of marketing automation campaign management and analytics products are mid-size companies and maybe low enterprise. And it is the CMO, the VP of marketing ops or demand generation, and the teams there. But there's also another market that we do sell to, which is the IT team and the CIO and IT members, particularly with our Journey Analytics and other analytics tools that we have and our experience analytics tools. So when you see these things coming together, that's actually the reality of how businesses work nowadays, is that the CMO and the CIO are paired often as the target for companies like mine. And turns out that is true. So I see them both involved often in many decisions, and I see the next layer of product or technology experts or functional experts involved in those decisions, whether it be the web team, the demand gen team, the communications team. Those are the next level that we go after. And we've been pretty good about learning how to really form a dialogue with those groups. And we're biased a little more towards the marketing side, but we want to be super inclusive of the IT side because we think they're critical for both parties to make smart decisions.
Yeah, it's interesting thinking through these days of, well, you probably use your own product, at least the philosophies behind it, and you're thinking through the journey of buying Acoustic. And obviously there are lots of different players involved, from influencers, decision makers, approvers, et cetera. And is your target more people who are focused on sort of a deeper customization of the platform, or do you look for more of a packaged, tied up kind of solution?
Yeah, this is an interesting challenge, Peter, honestly, because I want you to think about all the marketers, think about all the companies, you and I and Kelsey, we know a lot of them. And then think about how many of them don't have marketing automation technology of some sort today. Yeah, it's a very small number, don't have something. So to be selling MarTech, you really have to dig into the, am I replacing? Am I augmenting? Occasionally there is a greenfield opportunity, right? Maybe somebody's using an outsourced service to do that. And I've encountered a few of those. But oftentimes you have to get into a dialogue over, well, what's actually working or not working about what you have that would make you consider taking a step forward? Are you getting the value from it? Because I believe fundamentally marketing technology is about making marketing more effective. Unfortunately, I think there's a trend, and not a great one, in the industry of marketing technology becoming a lot about the technology and not the marketing part. And I think that overemphasis on the technology part has hurt a lot of marketing teams, where they become, I think, they start working for the tech as opposed to having the tech working for them. And we like to have discussions where we can find those instances and say, hey, maybe you'd like to be back on the sort of top here and have the upper hand with your technology and use it to actually accomplish your marketing goals versus it running how you're doing your business. And those are interesting conversations for us, and people who are frustrated perhaps with the fact that there's so much MarTech out there, but it's also often sold in parts of other big enterprise solutions. So we're focused on, hey, we're just going to talk to you about this. We're not going to talk about your ERP system and your accounting system and your back-end HR system at the same time. We really just want to have a discussion around what we can do to improve your marketing processes and your customer experiences.
Yeah. Tell us about your marketing strategy. How would you define it?
Hopeful. Totally hopeful.
It's a lot of prayer.
Yeah, pretty much it is. Our strategy has been focused on establishing the brand, establishing the fundamental processes of a strong demand gen engine, building the right messaging and content, and then continuously iterating on it. Because the fact is, there are other parts of Acoustic that were still going through transformation that, you know, we had to build an inside sales team and had to train them. And we were feeding them leads before they even had technology on their desktop to get the leads. So I've really focused, certainly over this period of time, on the fundamentals. Like, if I can establish the brand, if I can establish the engine, and if I have the right messaging and content, then as we start to really take off and market through our go-to-market engine, we can start to refine and get bigger and more exciting on strategy. But I really am sticking to the fundamentals on this because I have finite resources, finite amount of time, and just a lot of the stuff you would expect isn't there. And that's one of those learning experiences for me. And when I talk about the Acoustic journey is, even though we were a company with thousands of customers and lots of employees and awesome products, we really weren't a company because we had no process for go to market, no process for developing software. All of that was stuff that came out of IBM or came from the companies that had been acquired by IBM. And so there's, you know, this legacy that you tail behind you, and you have to look at with a clear eye and say, is this going to serve me as an independent company of this size? Yes, awesome. No, change it.
So you should, do you know Rick Mack, by the way?
I, do you know that name?
So Rick worked with me and Meg at Nuance. He was our head of comms. He's now the CMO at Cerence.
Okay.
And very interesting, because you should know Rick. I'll introduce you if you're interested. You don't have to say no now. You can just shake your head on the video and I'll introduce you later so he doesn't get embarrassed.
I like meeting everybody. Exactly. Dear, trust me.
but Rick is going through a very similar journey because they spun out of Nuance. It's the automotive division of Nuance. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting. I've talked to him recently over the last couple of weeks, and he's going through the same stuff where there was this expectation of stuff. And we had a lot of experience acquiring. So we acquired 100 companies while I was there, but never peeling something out. And now they have to figure out how to graft together all the pieces and cauterize wounds that you created because you just ripped this organ out of the company.
Exactly. I would love to talk to him, because that exactly is the thing. Like, there was probably, again, in a big company, there's a person who does a thing. And you do your job and you hand it off to the person who does the thing. Then you pull all that out, and maybe I pulled you, but I don't pull the person who does the other thing. Mm-hmm. And you're sitting there saying, what do I do with this? I normally hand it to Sally, but Sally doesn't exist anymore. And there's no person who does that. And you get paralyzed for a moment. What do I do? Oh, I guess I have to deal with the thing in front of me. And you do that times 1,000 every single day of the week.
Yeah, that it is some of the hardest phases to be in as in a company, is that growth phase, because I think if you're a small company, you think, oh my gosh, they've got an embarrassment of riches. They've got a little bit of everything. And the reality is you don't, and you don't grow along a perfectly smooth curve. You grow in fits and starts. You don't get to the point where you can hire a head of sales training, as an example. You've got to get the product marketing manager to dig in more and do more stuff, even
exactly right.
To the point where they're starting to break. And it can be easier in some cases when you're earlier stage, because you don't have any resources. You figure it out and you meter things. That middle part can be really hard.
It's exceptionally difficult.
So we only have a couple minutes left, but I want to ask you a couple of rapid fire questions. First of all, I wanted to give you a little plug for a really cool series you've been doing called Reset, which yes. I liked. And I love the concept. First of all, you've really creatively used video, which is great. And these days, it's funny, I think about it a lot producing podcasts, because literally we're talking over video right now. And during the pandemic, there's very few cases where people don't have the opportunity to watch video during this time. Hopefully the pandemic will be over someday and people will be commuting again, which is where audio comes in a little bit more. But related to that, it's a series that where you interview people about how they've reset things and how things have changed during this weird time. Anything that comes to mind as far as an interesting story about how companies have adjusted during the pandemic that you've learned during reset?
Yeah, we've had a lot of great discussions with people and we've looked at a lot of different ways of doing it. And there's been this recurring theme that I've heard from people, which is that as they went into the pandemic, they realized that it wasn't just a, oh, this is happening, we're going to change and this new thing will happen. It was a continuous evolution of, okay, now what do we have to change? Now what do we have to change? Well, now what do we have to change? And the pandemic, as we think of it, and the reset, as I've been talking about it, is really a process. And I think for marketers in particular, they realized that it wasn't, oh, well, all I have to do is, you know, shift from this to doing virtual events. Boom. Lots of us saw, and I've talked with others about this, big spike in webcasts, and everybody was doing them until there were too many webcasts, and then viewership drops off, and you try to figure out the next thing. So really, this reset process is one of continuous evaluation, and then figuring out how to, okay, I need to be over there now. I'll adjust a little bit this way, and I'll go there. That means a little less of this, a little more of that. The lesson for me in here is, I think that's the way we're always should be
all the time.
And right. And I think we lost sight of the fact that in fact, we should always be saying, hey, I'm a little bit off course. Maybe I'll adjust a little bit to the right or the left. That's been a great lesson that we've gotten from this.
It's funny. It's like evolution. And during the time when a giant meteor just hit the earth, where it just does a reset on the evolutionary path. And all of a sudden things change much more rapidly than they were in the past, but you still have to go through and evolve in a complex system. So it is a fascinating thing.
Good yeah. Example too. I actually have recently been on walking on two legs. So I feel that. A little evolutionary joke there.
You're very familiar with a lot of marketing technology tools. Just curious, which one's your favorite?
My favorite marketing technology tools. Wow, that, you know, I'm in this space, so I...
Besides Acoustic and besides Plana, which are the two most awesome tools out there.
Besides Plana, which, you know, are awesome. I'm gonna give a shout out to one that I think is a great tool and that is valuable and has just done an amazing job for a small startup company, which is the competitive intelligence tool we use called Clue, with K-L-U-E. It's a startup based out of Vancouver, BC, and they have great value in the product, terrific customer service experience, terrific training experience, and it really solves a great problem, which is it automates so much of the stuff you can automate in building competitive intelligence and battle cards and all the things we use, and allows a curation model as opposed to the old school, quote unquote, model of, okay, assign a product manager to build and update the competitive card for competitor A and competitor B and competitor C. Clue does a great job on automating a lot of that and putting it right into the hands of the people who need it. And using the type of model that I think we all have to evolve towards, where it's more self-service and it's also using the ability to scoop up the information that's easily available. So shout out to the folks at Clue.
Awesome. That's a great recommendation. I hadn't heard of them, so I will definitely check them out. We'll put a little
Tom
link.
I sent you. I don't know what it'll do for you, Peter, but
exactly. We'll put a little link in the show notes along with the other. And just in almost finally, tell us just a little bit more about how we can learn about Acoustic.
You can learn about Acoustic by visiting acoustic.com. Someday I'll tell you the story of actually how we had to acquire acoustic.com because nobody thought to do that before I got there. And you can also, of course, check out us on LinkedIn or check out myself on LinkedIn and see our reset podcast series or a lot of other content. And hopefully sometime in the future, come to some Acoustic event. When we all go back to doing events again, right? That's the constant iteration to figure out when we can all get together in person again and talk about this stuff over drinks.
Excellent. Sounds good. Kelsey, I think you've got the last one to take us out.
Yes. Norman, what advice would you give to CMOs or those aspiring to be one? Got to use a different one from the beginning of the podcast, though.
I know. I already gave you my important one at the beginning, which is find and keep great talent. I think the other thing I will say is really important is be able to recognize that marketing is not one thing. And by that, marketing is truly everything from the deep, wonky tech and data analytics to the creative. And I think this tension that sometimes exists between all the different ways in which marketing is done and comes together, great CMOs have to learn how to find their place in bringing together and if not harmonizing, at least trying to find some way to get that tension to be productive, because there you have to have the deep analytical part, you have to have the deep technology, you have to have the deep product knowledge, you have to have the deep creativity and comms capabilities. And you can't truly do without all of those things, even if it's just half a person or it's you as a CMO contributing in that regard.
Great advice.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Norman. And make sure to follow The Next CMO and Plana on Twitter and LinkedIn. And if you have any ideas for topics or guests, you can visit our website or email them to thenextcmo@plana.com. Stay tuned for our community launching soon, and have a great day, everyone.
Thanks, Norman.
Thank you.